Yesterday I checked to see the top of Beis Hamikdash. Gemara on Beis Hamikdash, the Mishnah Beis Hamikdash presented the soul Gemara on the top. According to the Chacham and Rabbi Yehuda, Sukkah that's more than 20 yams possible. Gemara Beis Hamikdash presented three approaches of Ram, Rava, Zera, or Chaverim, and then the next generation Rava, who is a Talmud of Rava. Three different approaches. Why is the Gemara on the top possible? Is it because, as Rava said, that you need to have yediyas haschach, you need to be aware of the schach and be able to see the schach, because on yesterday Rashi says you have to actually visually see the schach, for the ra'ah, the ritva says you have to be, for the ambiance, you have to feel that you're enclosed and covered, and that's why l'mal mikaf the fossil, or like Reb Zeira, we're concerned with the schach is too high, it's not actually going to be providing shade to where you're sitting. And if the strap is too high, the only shade you might be getting would be shade of the walls, or if the walls don't go high enough, then no shade at all. But the schach will not be provided shade. And the schach is the ikra of sukkah. We say the sukkah is provided shade, and the schach is provided shade. And finally, Rava, who said that the mashmaos ha-pasuk is diras aroi, 7 day sukkah, which doesn't mean you actually need a 7 day sukkah, but it does mean that at the very least you need. You need the sort of size that would allow for a 7 day sukkah, the height of not more than 20 ounces. That was the Gemara Beis Hamikdash. So the Gemara yesterday, Beis Hamikdash, the last 2 days, so the Gemara starts to compare and contrast the different terutzim. First, the Gemara works through why would what's the kasha on each of those three shitos, which prompted the other two Amorim to reject that shita. What are Zera and Rabba not like about Rabba? What did Rabba and Rabba not like about Reb Zeira? And finally, what would Rabba and Reb Zeira not have liked about Rabba? That was the top of Beis Hamikdash. And then we saw yesterday, the Gemara begins to present nafkaminas in the various shitas. We saw three different Talmidei Rav, each presented a shir they heard from Rav, but a limitation on the psul as Esrim, Lamal, and Esrim. And the rabbit said, three different Talmidim reported, rabbit said, that old Psalm on Yeshim only applies in this case, only applies in that case, only applies in that case. The Gemara tried to line up which is which. The Gemara had given, the first approach was Rav Yoshia. And Rav Yoshia had said, the whole Psalm on Yeshim is only, feel free to turn the AC if you want to, or not, whatever fellows want, is fine. Rav Yoshia said the psul of Malmi Esrim was what? Was only when Ain't Tavaz Megiyas Hasach. It's only when you have short walls. And the Gemara said that actually follows Rava. Because if you have the longer walls, but then either according to Rashi, your eyes track up the walls all the way to the Hasach. So you notice it. According to Ra'ah, you just feel more enclosed. So mainly you sense the roofedness of the Hasach. And that was the first approach. The second approach was Rav Huna, which we'll get back to soon. Rav Huna was one that said that the whole soul is only the maskaras ha-gemara when the sukkah is not wider than 4 amas. If the sukkah is anywhere between the minimum width of 7 tefachim, an amma and a sixth, and up to 4 amas, that's when you would say l'mal mi'esrim is no good. But once you get beyond a width of 4, so then l'mal mi'esrim will not be possible. And finally, Rav Chanan and Bar Rava had a much. And the Gemara said that has to do with the Reb Zeira, with the Tzel Sukkah, and we'll return to that in a moment. After we finish an overview, why the Gemara said Rav Chanan and Bar Rava had a third limitation, much like Rav Huna, but far more limiting. The whole Mishnah is all talking about where it's mamish minimum width. Mamish minimum width. It's 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. Anything more than 7 tefachim by 7 tefachim. That's already totally fine. And the Gemara says, what rationale, which explanation, Rabba, Zeira, and Rabba, in the din of the din of Lamal Yasa would yield that sort of limited din? The Gemara says, it follows whom? Nobody. And Tosis, by the way, as an aside, then we'll come back to Rahun in a moment. But yesterday we did not take a look at Tosis. Tosis points out the obvious question, when the Gemara says Lo Keman, Lo Kechad, it doesn't follow anyone. The obvious question is, so when is it? How did Rechad and Barabba understand the Psalm of Malam? It wasn't Rabba, it wasn't Zera, it wasn't Rabba. So It doesn't mean it's like, it means it doesn't mean there's no hesber, it means there has to be some fourth hesber. Take a look at Tosfos. Keman, the low kechad, in the middle of Beis Hamikdash, Dibir Echad Bara B'tzricha Taima. Tosfos says, that's not the end of the story. That's not a period, that's a question mark. So it's not like Rabba, it's not like Rabba, it's not like Rabba. And the Gemara doesn't fill in, so what is it? And Tosfos says, try to figure it out, maybe it's the following. Yesh Mefarshim, Mishum Dehavli Lul Shel Karna Golem. This is a, you know, a lulus coop. Right, this is a chicken coop. What type of chicken coop is this? Namish. 20 amas tall, more than 20 amas tall, and an ama and a shmitzik wide. It looks like this. That's more or less drawn to scale. Right? Seven shvachim is 1 6 amas wide, and 20 play more than 20 amas tall. That's a chicken coop. Now what's wrong with the chicken coop? Came to Gavio Katina Kuliai. It's so tall and so narrow. That's a chicken coop. Ava machzekas tvei mikdei roshu rosho. If it's more than just roshu rosho, and machzekas rosho mean machzekas rosho v'chulei, roshu rosho shulchanah, seven tach, and once it's more than that, then nafka, mikla lul shatar nagolim, it leaves the category of lul shatar nagolim, the ikruye sukkah, to be called a sukkah. Just like we had, so it sounds like what Thomas is saying, a fascinating idea. We're going to come across similar ideas going forward in the Gemara. We haven't seen it yet, probably, but we're already coming across in Tosfos that it fits the minimum size, it has kasher sach, but it still has enough wall, but still that's not, we don't call that a sukkah. Right? You see from the last line in Tosfos. If it's not lusha targum, now we can call it a sukkah. Lusha targum, that's not a sukkah. It's similar, not the same, but similar to what Tosfos raised on Beis Amanal, we spent a little time on that. And Beis Ushakal Hashan is by definition not a sukkah. Even though it has the right walls, has the right size, the right shape, the right dimensions, and it has the right type of sach, but it doesn't matter. That's where you live all year long, and you haven't refreshed it, you haven't rebooted it by raising the sach, like the Tosfos and Tesla Amanal said. It's Beis Ushakal Hashan is by definition not, that's not a sukkah. Sukkah means not your regular house. It's not enough that it fits all the technical specs of size and size and sah, it needs to be a sukkah. So here also, the sukkah means not based on shakal hashana, and sukkah means apparently not a chicken coop. In other words, this has to be a human residence. Doesn't have to be a human residence, but that's just not a sukkah. That's not human. Sukkah means a place. This doesn't. When you have, I believe, by the reason why Lulu Shatar Golem will be built like this, usually not as extreme. How many people have ever seen a live chicken coop? Many of you have seen it in Beit Meir.
My neighbor has
one. Neighbor has one. Where do you live again?
I live in the countryside.
Gotcha. Okay. In Teaneck, apparently it's against town ordinance to have livestock on your property. I'm told there's one property.
Separate turkeys.
Yeah. No, there's one property that's grandfathered in. There's one property actually right off from Sussex that they owned chickens from before the township of Teaneck passed that ordinance, so they're still allowed to have chickens, and they do. But it's good to know the Highland Park is more liberal in that way, and the more accepting.
Around the corner, they have two
words of him. Wow. Who knew? So now, if one thing to know about chicken coops is they tend to generate a lot of
noise,
and also the smell, the odor is sometimes foul.
Get it?
Oh, and that was.
Get it?
That's horrible.
That was entirely unintended. I promise you. Obviously so. That's why something you want to have sort of almost like a chimney to sort of shunt out, to vent out to ventilate the lul shel targum golem. I think that's why you would want to have a lul shel targum golem. I think you wouldn't want to have it short. You wouldn't want to have it pretty tall. It's going to often have that shape. There are other ways to build it also, but this is one way you could build a lul shel targum golem It won't be unpleasant for a person to go in and take care of the chickens and collect the eggs and do whatever else you have, feed the chickens, whatever else you have to do, if you have that chimney. But this little, skinny, narrow, very tall, that mamash, that's so unhouse-like. Think about Diras Kevin. That's not even Diras Adam Aroy. That just feels like animal quarters. It feels like not a barn for animals. It's not big enough. But it feels like chicken quarters. That's what Tosafot says. It says that maybe, it's a new din. And it sounds like maybe like a din daraisa. A new din daraisa. Sukkah me, again, as I was saying, aside from the technical respects, the technical requirements of the dimensions, the height and the width and the depth, and of what the sukkah is made of, and the number of walls, it has to be a sukkah. It has to be a sukkah as opposed to Bezer Shalkal Hashanah. It has to be a sukkah as opposed to Lul Shalkal Golden. As I mentioned before, the Gemara, we're going to come back, as we move a little bit further into the pattern, the Gemara is going to have ideas like this. About the Rasrucha, we'll see if that's, when we get there, Mr. Shem, we'll see, is that the same thing, is it not the same thing? But that's what the Tosas seems to be suggesting, to close up that hole, that gap the Gemara never filled in. So what is it? So there's not that there's no reason, obviously. There must be a fourth reason. Another Amarav, another Alfred suggested. Amarav had a fourth approach. Okay. Yeah, question.
It seems like
those
just reading whatever's convenient to what he thinks sukkah could mean.
I mean, where
to
come from?
Yeah, you can say this is something else,
and
not a sukkah. Like, whatever you want,
anything
could be possible. No?
I would take issue both in terms of form and content. Not in terms of the way one talks about Isis, but also in terms of content. I don't think this is willy-nilly. Not only was Tosus pointing out at least some Rishonim thought like Pitocha Hechrich, he must suggest this, but it's also these are all very, very, very basic parameters of what it means to be a sukkah. In other words, on the simplest level, what is a sukkah? So I'm saying on the simplest level, a sukkah means on the one hand, not my usual house. Again, that's not just Tosus, but that's Rashi. The Rishon saw that in the Gemara that we saw a few days ago, and Tosus saying maybe on the other end it does have to be the Ras Adam. Not only are there Gemaras later that indicate that one, but also the truth is we're going to see when we get to Gimel Amud Aleph, the bottom of Gimel Amud Aleph, not the upcoming Siddur, but the one after that, the bottom of Gimel Aleph on the Gimel days, there's a long Brisa that begins to expand our concepts of bias. And the Gemara is going to, for the first time, really is going to contextualize sukkah within the framework of other parallel topics. At least a little bit. Based on the Gemara said, oh, there's Dinavu Lamal Me'esrim by sukkah and by Korah. Then he says, the Gemara Shabbos says about Chanukah. But that's a side point. In terms of the din bias, so we're going to see a brisa that starts in, if you take a peek for a moment, brisa in the bottom of Gimel Amudal. Yikara Rabbanim. Bayis she'im ba'ar ba'amas ala ba'amas. The house is less than 4x4. Potter does not include all the din. No mezuzah, no maka, no nigei batim. The din of batar echoma. The din of the patur from war. Bona bayis v'lo chanachem. And Erev, and Shituf Bevos, and Tchum. And so on and so forth. The Tosus has Yerushalmi, it throws in some more. There's a halacha concept, a global halacha concept of bias. And that has, one example of what it means to be a bias could be, has to be dalal dalad. And that could apply to many, there are many different dinam d'arisa and dinam d'rabban that involve bias. And perhaps sukkah is one of them also. So we're going to begin to think about sukkah in the context of sort of global halacha categories. So the truth is that's when you deal with, so sukkah may not be a bias. We paskin does have to dial down. That's the one that we have on the side. But when we get to that more, we'll think about that. The Gemara is going to say, I mentioned yesterday, it was a Tana who held, and you see this Raisa, that's a Tana of Yudan Up, that's a Tana of Rebbe, Yudan Up, see, that has to be dial down. We hold doesn't have to be dial down, but of those cases, some of those are not just a question of bias, but more specifically a question of Beisecha, which the Gemara interprets as means, Goran Yuma interprets, and Beisecha means it has to be a house that you have deer in. Not just that it's a structure, But to be chayv in mezuzah, if I have an unused structure, not chayv mezuzah. The only chayv mezuzah, if you have the right structure, all sorts of structural parameters, as well as the right size and how it's built, how the doors are built, but also there has to be gira. And there are four or five criteria in the Gemara and Yuma, and the Rabbah puts them together. But what does it mean to be, what sort of dira are we looking for? For instance, machlokas hatanaim, what's the status of a barn? Is a barn chayv in mezuzah or not? So Pashta says you need diras adam. Beisecha means a place where, Tosus discusses whether beisecha means you have to own it or not. Presumably beisecha means it has to be a house that you use, that you have a dira in. Machlokas hatanaim, what's the story with a barn, leaving aside the odor in the barn, but is that considered, I don't live there, but I do go in to get the animals that I store there. So a barn may or may not be chayv, the same way a pantry or some other storage space might or might not be chayv. And but the notion you need diras adam is, again, that goes beyond sukkah. Obviously, dira is critical to sukkah, teshu kein taziru. Deer is critical to sukkah in terms of the ma'aseh mitzvah. But there is a concept more broadly than deer is adam. So to say that the definition of sukkah on a very, very, very basic fundamental level means on the one hand, not my regular dira, but on the other hand, it has to be the sort of thing that you would use for deer is adam. That's very, very misal. Yeah. Do you wait? See?
So according to Tosfos, with explaining or Kanamarava, he holds that the Muhammad mission of Hassel a sukkah that's 7 by 7 by 20 because it's like a chicken coop.
Right.
But everyone would say that if it's less than 20, then it's okay. But so why does making it less than 20 make it any less like a chicken coop?
This is less the dimensions are so extreme. That's just like, that shape is just not human. That shape just looks so much more like a place for animals than a place for people, we clearly don't pass in this way. So we so don't pass in this way that the Gemara never even formulated as an opinion. Right? So in other words, that the Svara might appeal to you less than the three Svaras are formulated on Beis and Beis should not surprise you. But this is, Rabbah must have been thinking about something. Okay, it apparently didn't catch on. In other words, Rabbah's Svara was also Rav Yoshua's Svara. And Zera's Svara was also Rahuna's Svara. Rabbah's Svara, he had a Svara that perhaps no other Amora put it to. To him, that was Masabra, the other Amora didn't agree. It could be no other. You should remember also just to think about the Gemara context. Based on the days, the Gemara is listing Talmidim of Rav. It's the second generation of Amoron. And Rav and Shmuel were the first generation. The Gemara Sanhedrin says, we learned Sanhedrin not so long ago. The Gemara Sanhedrin says, Yehuda Nasi, the end of the period of Tanan. Yehuda Nasi's, one of his top Talmidim was Rav. Rav Yechon was a younger Talmud. The Gemara says, Yechon says, he remembers seeing the back, seven rows back, and the Rav was seeing the front row, and he said, like, the sparks were flying. From Yehudasi's mouth to Rav's mouth, from Rav's mouth to Yehudasi's mouth. Never, not sure what that means. Literally, like it was a mace. Okay, it could be that mamash, a mace. The word describes elsewhere the kedusha of the Levi Torah was so powerful that it generated fire, some sort of miraculous fire. Or the Gemara means just as an expression, like the spark, where you say the sparks were flying. I'm not sure, it could be either one. Maybe he'd say, like, such high level, masumata going on the front, he's like, the sparks were flying, he couldn't figure it out. Either way, Rav is one of the top older Talmidim of Yehuda Nasi, and he ultimately leaves. Rav and Shmuel go to Babel. Gemara tells the story of how Rav did get smicha, Shmuel never ended up getting smicha, as we call him Shmuel, not Rebbe Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel go to Babel, and they're the first generation of Aram and Babel. Rav Yechon, who is the younger Talmid of Yehuda Nasi, remains there. It's Israel. He becomes the first, the most famous Amora of the first generation of Aram in Eretz Israel, together with his Talmud Chaver and brother-in-law, Reish Lakish. Then you have a few generations there in Israel. The Romans quickly put an end to that. And that coincides around the time of Abai and Rava is when Smicha is totally shut down, the Sanhedrin is totally shut down by the Romans in Eretz Israel. That's the end of the calendar based on Adam, and that's the beginning of the fixed calendar, the last Nasik. He realized there wasn't going to be any more work. We no longer will be a Sanhedrin without Simcha. Meanwhile, that's just the middle of the three Amoraim in Baruch. Abai Rava is the middle. Remember, let's say fourth, depending on the count, let's say fourth generation. And then the generation before Abai Rava is Rava and Reb Yosef, and Reb Zeir, the third generation. It is to think about context. In other words, the Gemara, the Amoraim on Beis on Beis live a generation or two before the Amoraim on Beis on Rav. In the third and fourth generations, Rava, Reb Zeir, Rava gave shiurim on the, when they gave shiur on the mission, the first mission of Sukkah, they formulated explicitly, they spoke out a svara for the mission. Rabbi said his svara, Reb Zeir and his shiur said his svara, Rabbi said his svara. And the Gemara is digging and saying, you know what, if we go back another generation or two beforehand, from Tamidei Rav, it sounds like they're already handling this sort of question. Reb Yosha never formulated directly as an abstract svara. Reb Yosha clearly was understanding like Rava and formulated it as a case. Reb Huna never formulated Reb Zeira that we know of, but it's abstractly, but he presented it as a case. And Reb Rava also presented his svara as the case. Tell you what that Rav was, and the Gemara says it's not 100% clear what his svara was. And the later, a generation or two later, apparently no one was working with the Chaim HaRav, the Tzar. Then it says, but maybe this was the Tzar. Okay. Yeah, Yossi?
So is it the dimensions of it are so drastic that if it's an animal or that it looks too small, like which part of it? Is that unlivable? Because if it's unlivable, so if you say it's because it's unlivable, then that's really up to what your standards are.
So we are going to get to unlivable. Again, so when we get to Gavdala, no, just to take a peek. Just to take, I don't want to jump it now, but just to take a peek, Dalam and Aleph is, you see the pictures in the middle of the Yomid, so the last line before Dalam and Aleph, the Gemara has a line of Dira Srucha. Rabbi says, this case we're talking about, where the Schach, the Sukkah, 10 Tfachim wide, but the Lava Schach is sort of sticking down. It's going to poke you. So the Gemara has a discussion, what's the status, and what's the why. The Rava says that's no good, because the Dira Srucha, the Eira Damdar, the Dira Srucha. Now, there's a lot to say about that Gemara, we're not going to dive into it now. But just to see at least, that there is such a concept, that even though it may be technically 10 Tfachim high, whatever is coming down is Chamosimu Tzilasa, so just from a formal standpoint, it works, but it's still Dira Srucha. The Yishal Ayin, what that means, and we'll have to, is Rav saying Pshat in the Shir Yitvachim, or something else, we'll get there, but yeah, there is a broader set of concern. By the way, just before we're going to go back to previous places, in a moment, that's where I want to focus on, but before we move on to previous places, you just turn to, if you have the new Gemaras, the ones that the MTA gave out, the very, very end, the last after the Rif and the Mordechai, at the very, very end, Talman added two sections. One is collection of Tosus, and the second one is a collection of Acharonim. If you look at the collection of Tosus, looks like this, right after the Mordechai. Turn until you get to the Rif, and then you get to the Mordechai and the Tosefta. And after the Tosefta, you turn the page, and you get Balei Tosus. Take a look at Tosa Rosh and Tosa Vayah Peretz. Tosa Rosh says, "The command the lokechad from Chanan Bar Rava Sarach Lafarsha Mishnah Tamacher. He must have some fourth approach." Period. First, no one Tosa Rosh over here. Command the lokechad and command. Then he says, "What is that? Chanan Bar Rava Sarach Lafarsha Mishnah Tamacher. He's going to have to give some other reason." Period. And the Rabban of Paris is even briefer. Kamanda lo kachad, again, the end of the second column of Tosafot Paris, right over here, my fingers. The Divrei of Chanan, Tzrichim Tam. Period. That's really the major movement here. Sounds more like, the Bible says, why not? There must be some fourth approach. Who's that guy? Who? Tosafot Rosh and Tosafot Paris. Right? Tosafot Rabban of Paris. Rabbeinu Peretz is one of the famous Balei Tosus.
Are these all different types of...
As an aside, yeah.
Are these all tosposes, but they're just different versions?
Great question. One quick bibliographical note is very, very useful. Bibliographical note. Useful in a lot of ways in learning. There was no person, I mean, you know this, it's obvious, but we'll begin by restating the obvious. There was no person called Tosos. We learn a Rashba, it's the chidushim of a man named Rashba, Rabbi Shlomo ben Aderes. He was a person, particular Talmud Chacham, who lived in one place at one time. He had a father and a mother, he had a Rebbe and a Talmud. And the Talmud Chacham named the Rashba. He had a Rebbe named the Rabban, Chidush Rabban written by the Rabban. The Rashba had a Talmud named the Ritva. Chidush Ritva are usually Chidush written by a man named Ritva. Sometimes they're written over by the Talmudim. But that, right, Rashi, there was a man named Rashi, who wrote a Berish and edited, and that's Rashi. The Tosos, as you know, like there was no one named Gemara, there was no one named Tosos. Both of them are texts that are composed of the Shaka Vataria of several generations of Talmidei Chacham. The Gemara, as you know, is a composition of, but an edited composition by Ravina, or collated, edited, what have you, by Ravina or Rashi, of six, seven generations of Shaka Vataria of Baruchim. So Tosfos is somewhat similar, but not as centralized. And that's important to appreciate in terms of how you look at Tosfos in different Masechtos and how you use alternative sets of Tosfos like Tosfos Rosh and Tosfos Mei Peretz. Tosfos begins with either Abel Tam or his nephew, the Ri. Abel Tam, as you know, is a younger grandson of Rashi. And Abel Tam really, Abel Tam had thousands of chidushim. Incredibly creative Talmud Chacham. But in addition to his thousands of chidushim on particular sugyas, he also had like a meta chiddush in terms of approach, which was to consistently do to Gemara the assumption about the Gemara that the Gemara does consistently to Tanakh. Which means the Gemara will generally assume you have two different statements from Tanan. Our default assumption is they probably are consistent with each other, even if it's not the same name. And we're going to try to figure out how the two pieces fit together. So before Ben Tam, many major Rishonim and Lake Onan, like the Rif and Rashi and the Baal Amar and so forth, were very open to this. And the Rambam, who was a great grand Talmud of the Rif. Because Rambam's father was a Talmud of the Rebbe Gash, who was probably the major Talmud of the Rif. They were very comfortable assuming that you have the Gemara in Sukkah that says this, you have the Rambam of Kama says that. So that's okay. Machlokes are sugyos. If it's the same name, same Amora, that's a problem. But if it's not the same Amora, so many Rishonim, not always, but seems like would often be comfortable assuming that Chalos of Sukkis. That's fine. It's not like this. They'll figure out how he paskin. The Rambam will often just quote one Sukkis, not the other Sukkis, because it's not like this. And he quotes one he paskins like, and that's the end of the story. Rabbi Yonatan's major chiddush in terms of approach was to assume, instead of assuming that a default likely that Chalos of Sukkis, he occasionally will say that, but the default approach is there must be some way, there's probably some way to resolve it. And then, with that assumption in mind, Rabbi Tam looked at Sugya Sashas and came up with thousands of chidushim. How are you going to make this Sugya consistent with this? So it must be there's a chiluk. Must be this case and that case are different, and that chiluk matters. And that's why here the din is like this, and there the din is like that. And that became the approach of Baal Yatosus. Rabbi Tam's both his biological descendants, as well as his non-biological descendants, but many Talmidim at the time were part of the family of Rashi. That was, seems like that was it was an aristocratic family in terms of, there was aristocracy of Torah. But at the time, and his nephew, the Ri, and then they have some family and not family, but they're Talmidim of the Ri and so forth. Those become several generations of Baal Yatosus. And the Ri probably was the one who began to write down Tosfos on Shas. And then over the course of the next few generations, the 1100s, the 1200s, maybe going into early 1300s, different yeshivas in France and Germany had the Tosfos that they got from Masorah, and then they added to it. As the Rosh Hashiva, the Talmidim there would have more Chidushim, more Tirutzim, and things continued to grow. And so over time, you have sort of like parallel sets of Tosos. But there was in the yeshiva in Shantz, they had a set of Tosos. In yeshiva in Kutzi, they had a set of Tosos. And so on. So a lot of overlap. But sometimes you'll have a Kashan territory you don't have there. Sometimes maybe this set of Tosos has a Kashan one territory, they have a different territory, or an added territory. Sometimes also it will be clearer, or things will be articulated. One version may be more clipped and not as thoroughly explained, and then the other version the ideas are made more explicit. But they could surely be machlokes. You could have a machlokes between Tosfos and Bava Kamma and Tosfos and Kiddusha. That's not a stira. That's a machlokes. You have if there's a quote unquote stira between Tosfos and Bava Kamma, Tosfos and Kiddusha, or the Kinyanagav is the Raisa Rabbanim. That's not a stira. That's a machlokes. It means one Bava Tosfos is being quoted here, another Bava Tosfos is being quoted there. Tosfos often doesn't tell you who they're quoting. Then Tomer v'Yeshlomo, don't necessarily v'Yeshlomo v'Inami. Don't necessarily tell you, well, the Re gave this parish, and the Baruch gave that parish. Sometimes they will. Sometimes they'll tell you, Rashban held this way, or Rashban held this way, but the Baruch said this. But often, especially in the more Yeridei Masechtos, they tend to quote names more. But Nashim Azikim, they often won't quote names, but the V'Yeshlomo v'Inami presumably means there are two different Bava Tosfos who each gave their approach to the sugya. Masha'enu case, to be clear, if the Rajman Bava Kamma says this din is the Raisa, and the Rajman Kiddusha says this din is Rabbana, that's a stira, because it's the same Rajman writing the Kiddusha of Mesechtos. So what did he think? That's a real stira. But if Tyson Bava Kamma says X and Tyson and Kiddusha says Y, that's a machlokes. That's a machlokes. So that's why also oftentimes one of the key tools in your toolkit, you come across a Tosfos, you know, like a line missing, you know, literally, or just like Tosfos said a terrace, but like it seems like they're driving at something, but they're not saying it out 100%. So often, if you look at the parallel Tosfos, parallel Tosfos might mean that the Tosfos is a different Masechta that talks about the same sugya. That you have not infrequently, or look at the other sets of Tosfos on your Masechta. So you learn Masechta Sukkah, you have Tosfos Arash. And that's easy to get your hands on. Tosfos Beit Peres is a little bit harder to find, but if you have this new Talmud Gemara, that's right there. So sometimes they won't add, sometimes it'll be the same thing. Sometimes it might be, on the other hand, totally unrelated. It might be a whole shtickle of pure Tosfos Arash, it just isn't in Tosfos. Okay? That's nice. But that's not good. That helps you with Tosfos, but more material for the buying purposes. But oftentimes there will be. There'll be a parallel Tosfos that might be a shade of difference. So it could be, now, bear in mind, one option is there might be a machlokas between what Tosfos on the page is saying and what Tosfos Rosh is saying. It could be different by a Tosfos in different approaches. But often, if it's the same, it's similar but not the same, it could be that the Tosfos Rosh is explaining more of what Tosfos is saying. And here, ironically, it's the opposite. Tosfos on the page said more than Tosfos Rosh, Tosfos and Peretz did. Why that's important is because you get the impression that the main thrust of Biotosis was really more the Kasha than the Teres. So the main thrust was we're missing something here. Rechama Abba clearly had some reason or another. That was one of the main thrust of Tosis. And then our Tosin page add, and maybe it's this. The Yesh Mefarshim, we don't know who the Yesh Mefarshim is. Be curious to know. The Yesh Mefarshim is this. One more Nakuda. Before we leave the whole concept of parallel Tosfos, another thing you gain from looking at Tosfos Rosh, in addition to the fact that they often will add to your appreciation of what's going on in Tosfos, and maybe an extra line that explains what's going on more, maybe there's an alternative tarot, maybe it puts it into context more. Another more modern gain of looking at Tosfos Rosh is now that the Masechta Rav Kook is starting to put out their edition of Tosfos Rosh. Now you have footnotes on Tosfos. Again, most of the time, Tosfos Rosh will be more or less the same as Tosfos, and now you have a Tosfos with footnotes. That's if you have developed already the taste for using the Masechta Rav Kook footnotes, and it's certainly a taste worth acquiring. So the fact that they're putting out Tosfos Rosh, in addition to Tosfos Rosh, is that now you have footnotes on Tosfos. That itself is often. Very, very useful. Obviously, you're using the version of that, you're not getting the footnotes. You get Tosfos Rosh. You get the red Masechta Rav Kook Tosfos Rosh, you get Tosfos Rosh, and you also get the Masechta Rav Kook footnotes. Maybe let's hold off on questions, some more questions for now. We got to take more questions later. I want to move on to the next step. what we did so far is sort of just overview the Gemara and had a chance to add this Nakuda, which you left out yesterday, about Rav Chanan Bar Rava, that there is this phantom fourth approach. Somebody told us who said there must be some fourth approach, not sure what it is. And some made a suggestion that our Tosfos, of course, and perhaps he saw us as Lul Shel Targolim. I'm suggesting the Svar of Lul Shel Targolim is akin to the idea that Sukkah is not the same as, so parallel, analogous to saying Sukkah means not based on Shabbat Shana, and maybe related to the idea of Dior Sruch, and related to the concept, the fact that in Mezuzah, Dior has to be Dior Sadam. Maybe some parallel idea as well. We'll have to see as we continue. Does the Gemara ever actually talk about Lul Shel Targolim explicitly? Or is it at least is it rooted in this concept of Diras Ruch? Okay. So we'll have to we'll keep our eyes open as we progress through the parak. But I want to move back to dig some more to what we left off with yesterday. And that was in the second presentation that Gemara Beis Avos made. The second of the three Talmidei Rav. We had Rav Yosha, Rav Huna, and Rav Barabba. So what did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna said what? That the whole psul he heard from Rav, that the whole psul of Malmi Kaf is only if the sukkah is dal dalid, or the maskana sa Gemara, dal dalid or less. And if it's up to dal dalid, that's when we say that the above 20 amos is no good, but if the sukkah were to be more than dal amos wide, then we would be fine with that. Right? So we thought Tysus raised a problem. What I don't understand. Something magical happens the moment you get more than an inch more than dalad amos wide, and all of a sudden it can be as tall as you want. If the issue, as the Gemara said, is Zera, namely, I need to be able to say that there's some shade that's getting in, so it should be, it's all similar triangles. This was intuitively familiar, perhaps explicitly familiar, or intuitively familiar with Euclid. I mean, if 420, the Taisa said, well, that's the same as 8 and 40, meaning the angle will be the same. So if instead of being 4, it's 5 on this one, so I understand that we're no longer going to passel 21, 22, we should passel beyond 25. The ratio should be the same. So Tosfos first says yes, then Tosfos says or maybe not. Right? There's the two approaches. Either in a chanani, yeshom lo'olam tzor harokh lofi ha'gova. No, you talk to me, harokh lofi ha'gova, the width has to be appropriate to the height, lofi cheshbon da'al amas asra, in the ratio of 4 to 20. When we said another, and let's just work that back into the language of the Mishnah and the Gemara. What Tosfos is saying in the first answer is, if it's more than 4 amos wide, then we don't passel it when it's over 20, specifically. But we will passel it when it's over whatever the appropriate height is for that width. So if it's 8 amos wide, we're not going to say, possibly hit 20, 20 is fine, 21, 20 is 5, 27, 30, 32, but when you get to 41, we say, whoa. That's not the possible. It's not that there's the first teretz and Tosfos is the same, and not that there's no din of maximum height. If the sukkah is wider, just there's no din of maximum height of 20. You say there'll be a different maximum height. Well, the maximum height is 5 times the width. So whatever the width is, that would tell you what the maximum height is. As the Tosh base points out, it's true in the other direction also. If the sukkah is only 2 amos wide, right, 12 tvachim, with 2 amos. So then it's true that it's possible over 20. It's even true that it's possible over 10. The Mishnah statement is true, but not fully extensive. But it's true that from Zion Tvachim until 4 Tvachim, it is possible that it's over 20. As a matter of fact, if it was less than 4 amos, something might have been possible that was a little bit less than 20. All depends on the ratio. So that's very misogynistic from a mathematical standpoint. But we intuit that in terms of the language of the Gemara, it's a little bit sticky to fit into the language of the Gemara and the Mishnah. Because, not possible in Mami Esrin, but it is possible at some point. And less than Dalal Amas, it is true that it's possible in Mami Esrin, it's even true that it's possible less than Esrin. It's a little bit sticky, that's what the Tashbates addressed. But the reason why, if the din really should have been, the Tashbates point that, it's not really a din of Psul Lamala Mikaf. It's really a Psul, it really is a psul of lamala mi 5W, five times the width. It happened to be when that sukkah is 4 hours wide, that comes out to 20. It's not really a din of 20. Bein l'hakol bein l'achra. That's what Tashbates addresses. And his answer was, you're right, but 4 amas is the standard sukkah size. At least betuvas chazal, maybe even now, might be. 4 amas more or less is a standard sukkah size. On the one hand, you don't want it to be cramped. It's kosher from the 7th Vachem and on, but it's really pretty cramped. And on the other hand, you make it much bigger than Dalal Amas, that's really a major investment for something that doesn't have to last that long. But the Tashbates argues that's really, Dalal Amas is not just from a halachic standpoint, Rabbi Yonasi holds it needs to be Dalal Amas. From a practical standpoint, Tashbates says, that is the standard sukkah size. 8 by 8, 8 feet by 8, give or take, 7 by 7, 8 by 8. Okay. So we live a more affluent lifestyle. So I think if you would call up one of the sukkah stores, they probably would tell you that maybe 8 by 12 is more standard. Even 12 by 12. Okay. So we live a more affluent lifestyle. So we sort of, even for 7 days, we need more. If you go to Morristown and you to the National Park in Morristown. To see Jockey Hollow, to see what revolutionary soldiers lived in for the winter, it's Bekoshi Dalal Amas al Dalal Amas, and they packed in, I forget if it was 6 soldiers, 12 soldiers, they packed a lot of people in. Again, that was wartime, that wasn't that. They were, and as you know, the Continental Army was on an operating shoestring budget. So that was probably less than the standard of living. But Lamaisa, people took less for granted. Tartash Bait says, Dalal Amas, it's a standard, it's your standard sukkah size. Practically speaking, if they would have had a sukkah outlet or a sukkah store in the day, if it was commercialized, in the days of Tanan, the most common model would have been the 8x8, the Dalal Amas on Dalal Amas. They said, that's a Dibra Mishnah Behoven. The Mishnah says, in typical days, it can't be more than 20 amas. But okay, if your sukkah is bigger, then more than 20. If your sukkah is 12 amas wide, so then 30. Your sukkah, sorry, then sukkah is 12 amas wide, and then you get 60. Right? If your sukkah is 2 amas wide, then you have to cap it at 10. But Dibra Mishnah Behova, and that's just fine. That's the approach of Tashbates. And how did I find the Tashbates? I wish I could say I have Bikis and Tashbates. I do not have Bikis and Tashbates. I would love to have Bikis and Tashbates. I do not have Bikis and Tashbates. How do I know about Tashbates? Because who told me so to Tashbates? A very classic type of thing.
Where is this?
Who told me to look at Tashbates?
The
Gilead Shas. That's right, Gilead Shas from Kiyagers. I believe they got their hands on Kiyagers Gemara, and the Gilead Shas, if I remember correctly, was they copied down the notes from Kiyagers made in his Gemara. So he had written because, well, and the most common type of note is Tosas elsewhere that quotes our Gemara, or like here, you have a Sefer elsewhere that quotes our Tosas. And you're not going to find that sort of like beyond, a step beyond Masoros HaShas. Masoros HaShas is a different Gemara, the same as our Gemara. And Masoros HaShas will tell you, when Tosas, our Tosas here quotes the Gemara there, then they'll tell you where to look. But if the Tosas, if our Gemara here gets quoted by Tosas somewhere else, Masoros HaShas usually won't tell you, but Rabbi Akiva Eiger often will. So that is the Tashbates, and he worked, that's one of the major, not the only issue, one of the major issues that he works on. And the second Teres of Tosfos, the third Teres of Tosfos we'll get to, the second Teres of Tosfos was difficult, mathematically difficult, the second Teres of Tosfos says, no. No. There's no similar triangles, and once it's more than 4 hours wide, any height is fine. And there's going to be up to some tail something. which is difficult to understand. Tosfos gives a mashal we saw yesterday to eating and being satisfied in Kippur. Very difficult mashal because there it's a complex non-linear system of how my body feels satisfaction from food. Okay, so there's a certain minimum amount that goes to my stomach. It'll shoot off some degree of satisfaction. But here it seems like there's not a lot of room to maneuver. It's just angles, just walls and sizes and sun and like, how could it be the sum tzel sukkah? It's a difficult. So we'll come back to the second teretz. First, want to work on the first teretz. Because the first teretz, we're about to open up the first teretz. Are there any questions just of like not understanding Pashup Shah? I'm glad to take those if there's some more. What if the type of questions, let's hold off those to later. Yeah,
Robert. What is a Dira Srucha?
Dira Srucha means a subpar, substandard living. Clearly means a rotten place to live. And I guess that works idiomatically in English, that it works in Hebrew. It's a rotten place to live. Okay. And then here's the thing. The Tosfos said, what we're looking for is this angle. And the first teretz in Tosfos, I can't say that's the teretz we're passing like, because we don't pass like Rabba, anyhow. Well, I'm sorry, we don't pass like Reb Zera. No, I'm over passing like Reb Zera. But that's what Tosfos says, and that sounds like other Rishonim called older, and others, that's certainly, I think, the predominant view in Rishonim. And the first teretz in Tosfos, it's all about the angels. Now, here's the thing. Make a little space, get rid of the chicken coop. So imagine this is planet Earth. Imagine this is the Sun. We'll leave it incomplete. We don't have to get into problems of Mosas and anything. But that's the Sun. Right? Here's planet Earth. This has not been drawn to scale, obviously. No. If we were drawing this to scale, we would need a very, very large whiteboard. So this is planet Earth. Here's a North Pole. Here's a South Pole. Here's the equator. Now, here's the sun. The sun doesn't smile, literally, but obviously it does give us a lot of light and energy. Kind of like this. Now, I'm standing on planet Earth. Right? So where do I see the sun? So if you look in this very nice, oversimplified picture, so if I'm standing at the equator, I look like that. Right? If I'm standing at North Pole, I look like that. If I'm standing at some other angle, I look like that. Right? So if I'm standing at the equator, how is the sun hitting me? 90 degrees, right off the top of my head. Right? If I'm at the North Pole, how's the sun hitting me? Right? No, 0 degrees, right? Marsh from the sun. Right? I mean, you're seeing the sun on the horizon. It's coming in like this. Remember, this is not being drawn to scale. You're not actually, like, you know, a tenth the size of the sun. And if I'm at any other angle in between, let's say if I'm 20 degrees north, so the sun is hitting me like this. So without, I won't trouble you with transverse angles, but obviously, it's at an angle of 70 degrees. Right? If I'm at the equator, which is, it's coming, the sun is coming straight from the top. If I'm 20 degrees off the equator, the sun is 70 degrees, 70, 90 minus 20 above the horizon. And if I'm at the pole, which is 90 degrees north, the sun is just straight ahead. I'm just seeing the sun on the horizon. Sort of stuck in mid-rise or mid-set and just sort of circles around. Make sense so far, so good?
Yeah.
Whether you're mathematical or not, does that make sense?
Isn't there
a tilt? Fantastic. We've made that moment. If the Earth wasn't tilted, which it is, so then the angle, and for those of you who like Greek, the Mishnah Shlulim, Kai Mishnah Shkolim, and the Pasuk in last week said, Yafsul Kim Yepes, the Mishnah says, and the Mishnah says, the Machlev Zatanoim, when they had the containers for the Machzah Shekel money, in the Beis HaMikdash, they had a set of three. They wanted to remember what the order they were scooped, so they could use them in order. Whether they were marked like this, or whether they were marked alphabet again. So a little bit Mekayim Yaft Lekim Yafas. So, if this was the case, version one, an untilted earth, if we lived on an untilted earth, then the altitude of this sun in the sky at noon would be 90 minus your latitude. Okay. But Harav Cooper points out that this earth is tilted by 23 degrees. Okay. The rotational axis, if you want to be technical, the rotational axis of the earth is 23.4 and change degrees off of perpendicular to the angle of 23 degrees from the rotational axis around the sun.
But the earth itself is straight up and down.
I don't know what straight up and down means.
I'm saying
The axis of this Earth's orbit around the sun,
right.
It's that calculated. Everyone knows that there are three basic motions in the solar system that we care about, but one of us is with the moon, and the moon right now is not relevant to us, but Rosh Hashanah will be. But I know we just care about two things, for our purpose, two things. Number one, the Earth turns on its own axis. That happens on a 24-hour cycle, and that's what makes day and night. Also, right, if the sun was there, we were here, and we just kept going like that, so we would have, that's why we have day and night. But not only do we rotate on our own, the earth rotates on its own axis, which means half the time we're facing the sun, so we have day. Half the time we're not facing the sun, so the other side of the earth has day, we have night. In addition to that, the earth also swings around, doesn't stay in the same position vis-a-vis the sun. The earth swings around the sun on a yearly cycle. Every 365 and change, cycles in a quarter, right? Days, we make a full rotation around the sun. That's what gives us a year. That's what gives us, if we actually pay attention to this, it would change which constellations you see at night, because you can only see stars at night. There are stars out during the day also, you just can't see them because the sun is so bright. Right? So we're facing different parts of this of outer space at night, different times of the year. Okay, that's not so relevant because we don't get that. We don't get that because we live with light pollution. What we do notice is that we have different seasons. Why do we have different seasons? Either way, we're facing the sun or we're not facing the sun, day and night. But why does it matter? Let's say the sun is right here. Maybe you're right. So, we have to move your job. Okay. So if I'm planet Earth. So number one, every 24 hours I'm doing a spin like this, right? So right now, people living over here are a day, people living on my back are a night, and as it turns, and now people on my back are a day, and over here is night. That's number one. Number two, while I'm spinning like the top, I'm also swinging around him. The Earth is swinging around the sun every year.
Now you're in spring.
What?
Now you're in spring. Now you're in summer.
Exactly. Now we're in fall. Now, how does that make for different seasons? Okay, so I face the sun from different angles. Big deal. The sun is the same sun, and it's not because sometimes I'm farther from the sun, sometimes I'm closer. As a matter of fact. Coming back after the brief of the morning commission. So again, so the Earth spins on its axis every day, that gives you days. The Earth swings around, that gives you day and night. The Earth swings around the sun every year, and that gives you a year, and as it says in the first parashat of Bereishis, it also gives you seasons. Why are the different seasons different, depending on whether I'm here or there or there, that, why does it matter? It's not because the Earth is closer to the sun in the summer and farther in the winter. As a matter of fact, in the Northern Hemisphere, it's the opposite. We're actually closest in January. Right. Now, it doesn't really make it cooler or hotter because that's just rays of the sun flying through a vacuum of outer space. It doesn't really cool it down. So what does make it now it's summer and now it's winter? The answer is,
the second sun.
The answer is, I'm sorry, that because the Earth is at a tilt, this is the axis, by the way, of our rotation on the sun, but this is the axis of our rotation on our own axis, our self-rotation. So we're all at an angle. So let's say this is the North Pole, this is the South Pole. So this would be June. This is summer for us. So as you see, if you're in the northern hemisphere, in this part, the sun is hitting us at a more direct angle. We're tilted towards the sun. In December, for the northern hemisphere, we're sort of tilted away. And the southern hemisphere is tilted towards. That's why seasons switch between northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere. That's why, also, by the way, as you know, if you were at the North Pole for... The sun does not set for half the year because you see where we are, right? That no matter what, how you rotate, the northern the North Pole is still getting sun rays. The South Pole is not getting any sun. And in December, it's reversed. That's also why, even if you not go all the way to the North Pole, if you go far enough north, there will be days that are incredibly long in the summer, nights that are incredibly long in the winter. There's a lot more different. And if you're within 23 and a half degrees of the North Pole, there'll be at least some days in the summer when the sun never sets. It'll dip low and then go up. Right, and it swings around the sky. Correct. Remember, just to put things into context, east, south, west. We never see the sun in the north, right? The sun rises in the east, and then it swings up higher towards the south, peaks in the south at noon, or whatever astronomical moon is, at Tatsos, and then starts going down to the west, and then we can't see the sun as it goes all the way down to the north because it's blocked by planet Earth, by our horizon. That's really what's happening. This, from our perspective, the sun is going like that to south, coming down the west, down around north, and then it rises again above the horizon. We can see it in the east. Now, because we're at an angle, so let's say on the first day of summer, the longest day of the year, everything, all the angles are actually going to be plus 23. The angle will be, right, in summer, the angle will be 90, minus the latitude, but plus 23. In the winter, we're actually angled away, could be minus 23. And in spring and fall, when the days and nights are even, so at March or...
November.
Close.
October.
September, this will be correct. In other words, 90 minus the latitude. So there's a nice latitude plus a piece that varies by the season. If you like to be technical, it's called a declination. You use delta. I'm not putting board because I don't want to see everyone. You're not mathematically oriented. Why do we care? Why do we care? Now we come back. We have a little bit of mild introduction. Now let's come back to Tosfos. I'll tell you a kasha that I was bothered by for many, many years, and the Teretz that emerged from our Shach Nataria of the last couple of days and Beis and Ralph, I think, resolved this problem. The kasha is really very simple.
Yerushalayim is here. Yerushalayim, the Rambam tells us Yerushalayim is approximately 32 degrees north. If you consult an atlas or Wikipedia, you will do on Google, you'll discover that it's, if you want to be precise, it's 31.77, which is pretty close to 32 degrees north. How high does the sun get in the sky in Sukkot?
That high.
So the answer is...
What?
Sukkot is the beginning of fall. The days and nights are roughly equal. It's around the equinox. So the altitude in Yerushalayim is going to be 90 minus 32. What's 90 minus 32? 58. Higher mathematics, fantastic. 58. So now you would expect that means that, like, Gemara types are telling us that if the sukkah is 4 amas wide, the walls can't be more than 20 amas tall. Why? Because I want to have tail sukkah. I want this light, the sun, to be able to come in. So if it's 4 amas wide, up to 20 amas, some sun can still get to the floor of the sukkah. If it's higher, it's not going to work. Right? So I'm hoping that means that the altitude is 58 degrees. Problem is, it's not. And the problem is, using the most basic mathematics you learned in 11th grade or 10th grade, right, you know that if I have a triangle and this side is 4, that side is 20, so 10 of that angle is 5, 20 divided by 4, and if you consult your tables, in my day, when I'm back in the days of Abraham Lincoln, when I was learning, I was in high school, we'd look at sine, cosine, tangent tables, or you could just pull out a calculator and say arc 10 of 5 is, you can check it, it's more than 78 degrees. Oops. But the sun never gets to 78 degrees. In your line, 4 and 20. Now, if all you want is 58, then 20 is way too tall.
Maybe.
Harsha the kasha.
The world must be flat.
When you look at this Gemara, you should immediately ask yourself that. Because you say, we're talking about 4 to 20. Tyson's Ravenous Power Ratio. 4 to 20. So you say, what's arc 10 5? 78 degrees. And you ask yourself, means the sun gets 78 degrees, but it doesn't. Very basic calculation. You could stay in the base on Medjush and Boyce and ask this kasha. All you need to know is that Rav Melechus Kirsh HaChedesh, who tells you that Yerushalayim is 32 degrees north of the equator, and you say 90 minus 32 is 58, but arc 10 of 5 is 70. That's a little bit of a problem. Again, my boy said. Again, my boy said. Let's just review from basics. We have a Mishnah. The Mishnah tells us days of an olive that the first rule you have to know about how you build the sukkah is the walls better not be more than 20 amas high. Why is that? So the second approach that the Gemara gives on days of an olive is Reb Zeira. Reb Zeira says because the walls are too tall, then the walls will be, the sach is so high in the sky that it's not providing any shade to me down here. Taisus on Beis on Beis. Gemara on Beis on Beis says, oh, that corresponds, 20 amas high corresponds to 4 amas. Why? And the first day in Taisus, which is the dominant view in Rishonim, is, yeah, I mean, that's just the ratio that you need. The walls cannot be more than 5 times as high as the sukkah is wide. And that way, some sunlight can get it. So if you... The Gemara is making a mathematical statement. Tyson certainly is translating the Gemara into mathematical terms. And Tyson is saying, height can't be more than 5. And the problem is, and you look at that with the language of Sotetello, you say, oh, I mean, the tension of the angle is 5. The problem is, the tension of the angle is 5. That's very, very, very high in the sky.
And you can, and again, and you don't have to be fancy about this. Let me point out, I got to this because we're sitting here in a Beis Medrash, in a shiur room in New York City, so we're doing this mathematically. If you live in Yerushalayim, Mitzvah next year, you'll be in Eretz Yisrael Sukkos. Try a simple experiment. Take a marker, put it down, and check to find out when the Chatzos is, or if you only want to check, look at a compass and wait until the sun is south. Stand up a marker and measure how long the shadow is. It will be more than a fifth of the height of the marker.
They weren't in Yerushalayim, they were in Bubble.
Okay, and Bubble's
is not that far
much
away.
Yeah,
I was wondering about that also. Remember, for 78 degrees, you need to be where? You need to be really close to the equator. You need to be like, what's 90 minus 78? 12 degrees. You need to be in the tropics for the sun to be at 78 degrees above the horizon, so to speak. Chazal were definitely amazing. Jews living there. Some Jews living there. That's not where the Tanaim who wrote the Mishnah lived. That's not where Zeir lived. Nowhere near. And it's chush makhtar. It's not like, fancy. Not fancy math. This is just, and remember, everyone looked at lengths of shadows. That's how you make a sundial. We live much more artificial lives. We live natural lives where astronomy is just part of life. Everyone knew how long the shadows were. That's just you look. And not only that, when you built the sukkah, maybe how many people didn't build 20 hours of sukkahs that often, because these are difficult and pointless, usually. But any shadow, look at any shadow on sukkahs. You show up, you're in Babel. Look at any shadow in the middle of the day. It's not that short. The shadows never get that short. Sukkahs time. I just explained to you why. If you were actually living in Yerushalayim, or in the Galil, or in Babel, you would see that. You would notice that. So what's going on? And Tosfos is saying, this kasha bothered me for many years. Kasha bothered me for many years because, mathematically, so you look at the Gemara and Tosfos, Shmak, right? Five. And then all of a sudden, five translates to 78 degrees, which is all of a sudden totally wrong. What's that pshat? That's the kasha. Kasha. So this kasha bothered me for quite a while. And I figured last week, okay, I was planning to present the kasha, and I don't know. Tarek, at first I thought maybe the Tash Bates gave the Tarek, maybe Tash Bates slowly, carefully. He talks about similar triangles, I didn't thought it would be honest. So what's the Tarek? Then I was thinking it could be maybe based on what we developed a couple days ago, maybe able to solve this. Remember we were talking about the top parrot, the top faces of days and days? And the Tosfos says, and the Gemara thought that Reb Zeira's teretz tabayis kasha of days and that was really a geshmaka teretz. Rava's teretz wasn't such a geshmaka teretz, so the Gemara revives that kasha and reviews it on days and days. Even though, as you pointed out, the two teretzim, the two kashas are pretty parallel, the two teretzim are pretty parallel. Because Abaya had asked Reb Zeira, how can you say do you need sail? But what if you're in the middle of a valley, Ashtaros Karnayim, there are these tall mountains near you, and there's never shade anyhow. So what did Reb Zeira say? The Gemara, either Reb Zeira himself or the late Avraham on behalf of Reb Zeira. The Gemara said, no! But how many actual tzeil just need loyal tzeil? It happens to be there are mountains in the way, so we don't get sun anyway. But if there were to be sun, so the schach would properly position to get shade. Royal tzeil is enough. That was Reb Zeir, that was a teretz to Abaye's kasha on Reb Zeir. Well, Abaye then asked the kasha of Rava, very similar kasha. You want diras arai? Really? But what if it's not diras arai? not 20 amas, but for other reasons not Arayim. In Mechita Shel Barzel, it's only 5 amas tall, but a rock solid, or iron solid. Really? Possible? So Rabbi give not the same, we spoke about it, not the same, but somewhat similar, you need Roy Le Arayim. Again, it's not exactly the same. The answers are pretty similar. And yet, Tosfos says that Reb Zeira's answer, that was Gevalt. Rav's answer, we're not so sure, and that's why we raise the kash again. So, number one, so what's the difference between Rav's answer and Zeira's answer? They're both saying right. Number one, we learned based on Alpha, so Rav's answer is a little more distant, because it's not even like, you don't need something that could provide a right, as much as Rashi Tosfos spoke about. It's a way of saying 20 ounces. It's a fancy, poetic way of saying 20 ounces. That's one difference between Rava's teretz and Zera's teretz. One reason why Tosfos might be saying Zera's teretz is more mikabel, Rava's teretz is more debatable. But also, another difference we spoke about, we learned about Aleph, is the following: that Roy Litzel is demonstrably true. It has to be that we don't really need actual shade. It says not that it just could provide shade. How do you know that? How is it clear, demonstrably clear? I can't prove that Roy La Roy is sufficient in the way that I can prove that Roy Litzel is all that you need. Now, how do I know that? I think we spoke at the time, a simple, smart. It can't be. It's obvious that Yusuka doesn't have to actively be providing shade. It's not that it's built that it could provide shade were there to be some there. Why? Because the Mishnah says that you sleep in the sun. You sleep in the sun. Not providing shade. From the sun. It's okay, not exactly providing any shade.
Sorry, why do you know that? It says.
Well, the fact that once you assume that you have a mitzvah of sukkah by yom balayla, and there's a mitzvah to sleep in a sukkah, that when you sleep in the sukkah, it's not providing shade, but there's no sun. The sun is blocked by planet Earth. Right? How do you sleep in a sukkah if you're holding each sail? The answer is, obviously, that's good enough. What is good enough? It's not providing sail. The answer is, well, Roy, it's built to provide sail when there's a sunshine. It's built to provide sail when there's a sunshine. Right now, the sun is not shining. Right now, the sun is blocked by planets. That's what Zera is saying. Who I did not. There happen to be mountains in the way, but that's an external consideration. But were there to be sun, that'd be a good one. If Ryan had asked, how about if I move my sukkah to the equator, well, then the sun could be, direct, as we saw, directly overhead. The answer, presumably, I think, we discussed at the time, is apparently the location of the sukkah is a part of the sukkah itself. It's a natural spark from a real estate perspective. And they also mean dine sukkah, the fact that the floor is a part of the sukkah may reflect whether the floor is attached to the ground or not. That location of the sukkah, apparently you see, location of the sukkah is an integral part of the sukkah itself. So I'm going to look at the sukkah itself. The location, the walls, the stach, how high the stach is. Look, I made the stach lower to provide sail, that's not, I don't care. I look at the sukkah shel atzo, but external considerations. I like the fact that the sun is blocked by the mountain, or maybe by the high rise apartment building next door. Or the fact that at nighttime the sun would be blocked by planet Earth, that's an external thing. This sukkah in a vacuum, the sukkah shel atzo, could provide shade. The sukkah in its location could provide shade. So that's the case. Maybe. The same way the sukkah is kosher at night, because during the day it could provide shade, even though right now the sun is blocked. Perhaps also in this location it could provide shade at a different time of day. Ulai, I'm not saying the same, but perhaps it's good enough that the sukkah could provide shade in this location at a different time of the year. Because sukkah's time, the sun doesn't get that hot. But like we spoke about, we live, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the planet Earth such that the axis of its rotation is 23.5 degrees or so off from the axis of the orbit around the sun, which means that in the summertime, the sun is 23 and change higher than in spring. So as a matter of fact, in spring, on the first day of spring, the first day of fall, Sukkot time, you go out Yerushalayim, midday, the sun is 58 degrees above the horizon. Yeah, but, Ober, if you go out on the longest day of the year, it'll be more like 81 degrees above the horizon. But number one, for 2 months a year, the sun will get to at least 78 degrees. And you probably, and if you want Seil Sukkah, even on the longest day of the year, in other words, it was mamish 81 degrees, but that means the sun is just missing before. So that numbers of horror work very well, just not at that time of the year. If it's in the summer, when the sun is highest, the ratio of 20 amas to 4 amas fits well. So it could be. I wouldn't have guessed this, but once you look at the numbers, it could be that the same way the sukkah is kosher balayla because by yom in this location it'll provide sale. Could be the sukkah is kosher in Tishrei because in Tammuz this sukkah could provide, is built to provide sale. In fact, it could provide in this location, this sukkah in this location could provide sale at some point, is enough even if right now, whether the sun is going to get there, but in this location, this sukkah, Kishal Atmo, is built to provide sale at some point, it could be that is good enough. You've been waiting for that, I think maybe a tariff to this discussion. Yeah?
Okay, Ashkan, the question is that, is the Earth tilted on its own z-axis, or is its rotation on the sun tilted off of the sun's axis? Because if it's like this, when does the equator ever get 90 degrees?
Oh.
If the sun is like that, I think it rotates like this, but it, like that, on this plane.
So if this is the sun over here, and this is the axis that we rotate around, so if this is the Earth is here, it's rotating around this axis, so Earth moves like this.
But then when is the equator around 90 degrees?
At spring and fall. This is what it looks like spring and fall. This
how
is summer,
is
this
that,
is winter.
How is that?
Because as this moves around to here...
Right, the lines are still the same direction.
No, because now the sunlight... The axis of the rotational axis is like this, but the sunlight is coming like this.
But the sun is coming at the same. I'm saying the lines are at the same angle.
Maybe they aren't. Think about it.
Yeah.
How to get from here to here?
Right.
How to switch.
Right.
Obviously, I go from plus 23 to minus 23. Right. Obviously, in between, you went to zero. Because you're going like this. Because now the plane. Because in summer, and I don't want to get too involved, but if you just think about it, in spring and fall, the variation, the direction of variation is orthogonal to the direction of summer. Spring and fall, when the Earth is over here, the variation from here to here is orthogonal to the direction of summer. So it doesn't matter in terms of the angle of attack of summer. Yeah.
Underneath a big, more like a tree that dies every year and grows back.
Banana tree. You build a sukkah
right.
Underneath a banana tree.
Right, so you can't.
Correct.
Right.
Absolutely. Very good question. What's the difference? The difference is that the fact, the psul of a sukkah tachas ilan is not that it has to be ro'oi to not be tachas ilan. It can't be, as most psulim are actual. The sukkah has to actually be. 10 tefach, at least 10 tefach away. Sukkah has to actually be 7 tefach away. Sukkah has to be covered by snap, which is actually the dule karka, and is actually cut off. I'll give you another example, right? Let's say I have live vines or a live tree, and it's sitting on, the live branches are sitting on the walls of my sukkah. I could cut them, and then they would be not mechorbel l'karka. But as long as until I've cut them, it's possible. Why? Because the vast majority of criteria for sukkah and halachically in general have to do with what actually is. What Reb Zeira and Rava are saying, Reb Zeira in particular, is saying based on Aleph, is sale is an exception. It doesn't have to actually provide sale. It just has to be royal attempt. That's unusual. That's unusual, I agree. But number one, we understand it in Svara, in Lamed, to understand why this is different. Because it's just a question, especially once you get to Amud Beis, right? And Master Shaka Tariyah yesterday. It's all about, it's a Gili and Milsa. It's not that Yishayon not teach you a din that you need sale. Yishayon is teaching you how to translate the word sukkah. You know what sukkah means? The word sukkah in Hebrew, biblical Hebrew, means something in shade. So I have to say, are you sitting in a sukkah or not? Are you sitting in a shade giver or not? But that is the use of, I understand the term that the Torah used. So that's why Isaiah says, look, both, it fits with the svara of the din. To say, with the structure that didn't lend itself to saying, doesn't have to actually give sale. That has to be the type of thing that it has to be. It's not that I need sale right now for Shas Yeshiva. This has to be a chetz of sale. This has to be a hefty of sukkah. Sukkah means the thing that gives shade. Do I care whether right now it gives shade up? Maybe not. But it works. The lumdus is a category such that lends itself to this. And also, it's mukhah. It has to be that way because otherwise every sukkah will pass all night. Which is clearly not the case.
So what about one
but that's unusual. Most of them are not just roi. Not just it has to be roi to be under the sky. It has to really be under the sky. I could knock my hat. I built a sukkah inside of a circus tent. We could take the tent down.
I was going to say one of those retractable roofs.
Correct. The answer is that's what I'm saying.
But the roof's in the way.
There it's not a din of roi. That's a different din. There that's not a din of roi. It's not enough to be roi to be under the sky. It has to really be under the sky. It's not enough that the sukkah is roi to be attached to the ground. It has to be action. 95% of those who sukkah are like that. Right? 95% of halachic categories in general have to do with actual. Every once in a while, something has to do with roi.
What's the difference between it being in a bad spot with the sun never hit there anyway, and being in a spot where it's not good because the sun can't reach it either way?
Now, is looking because you see from Beis HaMelech that this is one of, or from top of Beis HaMelech. Right, where the Gemara says, Beis HaMelech, Zera's teretz to Abaye was that this is an unusual type of din. This is not a din required sale. It is just a din that it needs to be built, engineered, designed in a way that could provide sale, which is unusual.
So
a sukkah underneath a retractable awning. No, but that's not a question for. No, the reason why a sukkah top of the ilan is possible nothing to do with the fact that it doesn't provide shade. Sometimes it's possible because the Gemara says on the Adab Tes, if a drasha from a pasuk, you can't be right. You can't be sukkah tacha sukkah, independent. There's nothing to do with sale. There's nothing to do with sale. There's nothing, we don't hold that group's hand. We don't require right on sale, but we still agree that sukkah tacha is a human pasuk. That's a separate and unrelated thing. You're right. Reb Zeira would say, why does Reb Zeira hold you need a drasha? I'll just say it's not right on the tail. And say, no, it is right on the tail. I can knock down the tree. I like Mam Shashra's Karnayim. If the mountain wasn't there, if this was my chin, it's fine. If it's just from the side, blocking the side, it's fine. It's just if you have something directly on top, then you have a new psal, nothing to do with sail, a new psal of Sukkah Tachas has something else. And that's the right of drasha, and test of the base, drasha of pasuk. That sukkah tachas, another layer, is possible. Don't do a shake. That's a rule. Sukkah has to be directly tachas, keep possession of it. Yeah?
Why is it 24 then? Why is there a ratio of 4?
Because that's what's going to give you.
But it could be 6 to.
Oh, good. If you want 81.
When it's 22.
Very good. 10 to 81 is more than 6.
The angle is 22. Then you have 6 to 1.
You're right. Good, Valde. Right, so the truth is, on the longest day of the year, on the first day of summer, June 28 something or other, so the maximum altitude that the sun reaches in Yerushalayim is going to be around 81 degrees, or if you crunch numbers a little more precisely, at 81.73. Right, a tangent of 81.73 is more than 6. Correct. So if it's 4 hours wide, it could have been 20 some odd, more than 24, I'm still correct. So why? So I was wondering about that also. Right? So I was wondering about that also. So one of two things. Either Chazal wants to set up a number that would allow for maybe geographical variation. Another, because they're giving a shear, it's not just be relevant for Jews living in Jerusalem. There were Jews living in, because 3 degrees over, 3 degrees over, you're hitting 78 degrees.
Right. Because other
correct, but there were very few, if any, Jews living in the North Pole and South Pole. But there were a fair number of Jews living in Crete, Yehi Hayah, and there were a fair number of Jews living in Turkey. The number of Crete, and in Gold Tower is 3 degrees. Right? So 3 degrees north, and you look at the 35 degrees north, that this number is on the nose. That's one possibility. Another possibility is very simple, is that this is to mamish. 78 degrees means the sun comes in like this and it hits the corner. If you actually want the sun to come in and provide some sun, I mean, actually provide some shade, it needs to be a little higher than 78 degrees.
You're not lying on the floor.
What?
You're not lying on the floor, though.
That area is.
Are you saying the offset? Well, what if you're sleeping? In other words, you do have the space on the floor has to be shaded. So in other words, like this. If it was 70, if here's my sukkah, and here's the wall, and here's the floor. So if I have a 5-to-1 ratio, if the sun is at 78 degrees, it means the bottom of the sunlight is in the corner. But it's still not providing shade. When it's 81 degrees, so then you have a little bit of sunlight down here, or the sock, a little bit of area being shaded by the sock. But that's the other reason why there may be a variation. The either variation just to allow, because the Chazal just gave a shear that would work for where Jews were living, the expanse of where most Jews were living, or because 4 by 5 by 1, that you're providing. You want the angle, this angle is 71 degrees, but you're really looking for sun to be a little higher so that it comes.
80 degrees is a 61.
I understand. But you want sunlight to be able to peek over and talk and reach the floor. Right? So again, if this is 20 and this is 4, so. This angle is 78 degrees. But it could be that the angle we're actually looking at, and during the kasha was in springtime, the sun never gets even that high. The sun only gets like this high. So it's being blocked anyways. Now your problem is the sun actually gets to drop higher, then that might be what we want. Because if the sun is exact, if we would allow for 24, or if this, when the sun is 78 degrees, so it's not hitting the floor. It's almost hitting the floor. But what you want is the schach actually is providing shade, which means you're looking for sunlight to actually make this clean. You're looking for sunlight that actually goes like this. And there's your 81 degrees. I think those are the two, those are the two answers to that kasha. Noam and Ephraim.
So everything
has to
do
with what changes at the court. I'm sorry? No, Rabbi Yehuda held that we don't care about any of this because all Rabbi Reb Zeira and Rabbah are all explaining what did the Chacham hold of. And Rabbi Yehuda does not hold of that. So for instance, according to Zeira, Rabbi Yehuda holds, you don't care about shade. So I don't care what the angles are because you don't need shade. But I thought Reb Zeira understood another time that did require shade or right to shade, and therefore we have a hakpada about the shape of the sukkah. But that's, I think, a lumdus of teretz to a trigonometric kasha. You appreciate the lumdus of beis on the olive, top of beis on the beis, and you appreciate what right of tail means and what it doesn't mean. Right of tail, the obvious has sukkah, has to be right of the tail, and that includes location, but does not include neighboring mountains or buildings, nor does it include time of day, because after all, the sukkah is kosher at night. It also might not include time of year, in which case you understand why Chazal set up a ratio of 5-1, the tangent of which is slightly less, 3 degrees short in Eretz Yisrael, of the arc tangent, you know, which is 3 degrees less than the maximum altitude of the sun's line, either allowing for it to work in a wider swath, a couple hundred miles around, or allowing for the sun to actually peek over the roof and hit the floor to some extent. If you want to do some more math, you can figure out at 81 degrees how much of the floor is actually beginning to shake. Think about that. Is that significant? Now, you can take a look at that. I want to briefly talk about two other things. Another more cautious, but we're going to, because it's a flip day, we're going to go to the basement after this year. Somebody will take more questions. Then I want to briefly talk about it. I know we've been going for quite some time, and the mathematics has been energizing for some and enervating for others. And the topic going a little longer than usual. I want to wrap this up, wrap the sugya, and then we'll have to basement back to take more questions. But it's two final points. Number one is the end, the second terrace in basis. In the second Teretz of Taisus, we just work on the first Teretz of Taisus that there are also, since the other Rishonim said, it has to do with the angles. Okay, so the angles are a little shver, why are these the right numbers? But we understand the Svara of Taisus is easy to understand, right? They also do with the sun is coming at whatever particular angle is coming at. So all I care about is the rate. I don't care about particular height. I care about a linear question, the question of the ratio, the shape of the sukkah. Good on. And then the second Teretz of Taisus was no. The Olam Tzarech Haroch of Fiyadova. Excuse me. Second time says no. Kimu Rabbana Filu Begova Elaf Yav Shoye Kan Sel Sach Porta. If that Chazal had a tradition or an assessment that once it's more than 4 hours wide, no matter how tall the roof, any of the walls are 1,000 hours high, there's going to be some degree of Tzel Sukkah. Like the Gemara says in Yuma, that once you eat a kosher sagasa, any human being, you cross a certain threshold, you eat that volume of food, everyone feels some degree of satisfaction, some degree of taking the edge off of my hunger. If I'm bigger, it's a little bit of satisfaction, a smaller life. The kasha was, how are those two allowing this? My body is complicated by a chemical system with hormones. It's okay, it could be, not a linear system. Everyone, you have more than a certain amount of food, so that kicks off a sense of the ghrelin or whatever it is. The hormones start telling me that I'm a little bit satisfied. And more or less, but I'll feel some satisfaction at that set point of kosevas agasta food. But how does that work here? Here with her, it's just angles. It's a simple, transparent physical system. So how could it be that? Well, I understand. If it's 4 amas wide and 21 amas high, garnish. But once it's more than 4 amas high, there's definitely going to be some tzel sukkah, but more or less. What do you mean more or less? I think the teretz could be, the beginning of the teretz could be, at least, the Ram. Turn, please, to the Ram. I'm sorry? Porta means a little bit. Porta means a little bit. Let me give you something to work on. Time to work on, see if this will help you develop a full answer. But take a look, I believe. The Ran, you're a master of this sukkah, with the bottom of Alpha Ral. The Ran seems not to assume that the first terrace in Texas. he was assuming that we're not looking at a ratio of 5 to 1, it's an actual number 20. So he says, I don't understand. So the sukkah is Zayin Tvachim wide and 20 Amos letters? It's never going to be that. He asked a similar kash to what we asked about 4 Amos. He says, the sun never gets that high. Take a look. The sukkah tiyat tel yomim. Ela betzel devamos. Hatzlalim agim zel zel begav gavar zatvam. If it's more than 20 Amos high, the walls are so high that the shade of this wall and it hits the other wall. The entire sach, you wouldn't need any sach to fully shade the floor. Timehami fektura, I'm shocked. Ain't something. There's no doubt in my mind, says Ram, she ain't shum shah by yom, sheshach shazan zayin, which is the minimum hechsher sukkah, yimna, so you can't have matach of kol shel gavocha. He said, you have a sukkah that's 20 hours high and 7 fathom wide. Even in the middle of the day, the sach is not providing shade to the floor of the sukkah. Think about that's a ratio of 7 tefachim, 20 amos is 120 tefachim. I think it was arc 10 of 120 divided by 7. That's pretty steep. Very, very steep. Ron says, this sun never gets that high. Never, ever. What's going on? The Tosfos said in the first heresy, no, if it's only 7 tefachim, so then it can only be 35 tefachim high. It's a 1 to 5 ratio. The Ron is clearly not assuming like the first heresy Tosfos. He's assuming 20 is absolute. He says, 1 second, so how does it work? So this is actually very similar, parallel to our kasha on the second heresy Tosfos. How is this working? So he answers, he says, and it keeps going. I'm sorry?
86.6
degrees. Right? That, you have to be pretty close to the equator to get sun like that. That's very close to direct Yoreh. V'cheven d'haitzil, let's go by it in the Ram. V'cheven d'haitzil noach hama v'inan lei. Why do you need the shade? You need a shade that's supposed to be blocking the sun. K'demucha p'irchei dat bayis. You see from bayis kasha. El miyata osetuk ba'ashos karnayim. We're referencing the Gemara Beis Zamenah. The clear, the whole point is that the sukkah is supposed to be blocking sun rays. No, what sun rays can even make it through from floor to ceiling to floor of a sukkah that's 7 tefachim wide, 20 amos tall? Gevalt, the sun never gets on. Hechi amrinon, how could you say ad kaf ama adam yoshev b'tzel sukkah? They're up in the 20 amos high. You're sitting in the shade of the sukkah. Could we deny empirical reality? Muchash, chush is a sense. So muchash is that which is sense. But the Ram says we can't deny it. Observable reality. It is a replicable experiment. Go look outside, says the Ram. What were we saying before? The Ram said, go look outside. The sun does not get that high. Experiment. The sun never gets that high. It's got 86 and change degrees above the. It's never going to be that way. Near the equator will be, but nowhere near Yerushalayim. The Ram says, "What does the Gemara mean?" The figa chaniel me'ami tov hadocha. The Ram says, "I'm about to say something. I'm not very excited. You don't hear the Yerushalayim speaking so explicitly at all." He says, "I'm going to have to say something because of pressure. In other words, the." Not chalila ideological pressure. I mean, this is the pressure of the sugya. This is not what I would have guessed, but apparently I'm going to have to say something that to me seems a little bit dachuk, but that's what you got to say. Apparently, says the Ran, Chazal were assuming, Kimul Rabbanan, they had a sense, again, that Kimul Rabbanan, there are several same language, second day in Texas, Jesus, that Ad Kaf Amma Megin Aschach Ume Ma'et Chum hachama v'mishu yoshev tachteha she'en mischamin b'kolkach. He says, apparently the Ram says, it must be that it's not just about blocking direct, straight sun rays. He says, again, the first day in Tosfos would have said, you would have disagreed the Ram to read the Gemara. The first day in Tosfos would have said, if it's only 7 tefachim wide, even less than 20 amos is the apostle, once it's 35 amos. But the Ram was assuming, no, separate. It's a simple language of the Gemara. It does indicate like the second day in Tosfos, like the Ran against the first day in Tosfos, that anywhere between 7 Tefachim and 4 Amos, the maximum height is 20. There's an how can it be? It's not blocking sun rays. You don't need Tzach to block sun rays. Those sun rays are all blocked by the world anyways. He says, apparently, I must say, says Ran, that they had this Chazal in a sense that even if you're not blocking sun rays, but up until that angle, up until that height, and the stock is providing some protection from the heat of the sun. Remember, the light only travels straight, in straight lines, in straight rays. But the heat of the sun obviously doesn't just travel in straight rays. If I'm in the shade of a tree, it may be cooler than out of the shade, but it's still going to be plenty hot. It could be a lot hotter in the shade outside of summer day than inside in air conditioning. Right? The heat doesn't just travel in straight lines. So the Ran says, apparently, it's enough. Sail sukkah doesn't even have to be from the light, direct light. It could be from the heat, which may have to do with the language of Chorev and the pasuk. Sail yomam from the Chorev, that was the language of the pasuk Yishayahu. It may be a reference to heat more than to light. It says the Ran Gevaldik. That it's me'ma'ek chumacham l'mishu yoshev tachteh. Even though the sunlight wouldn't strike you anyways in such a sukkah, even if it was schachless, but having the schach, if the sukkah is not more than 20 amos high, would at least dampen the heat. Ki'ilo haya magula. It won't be as hot as it would be were you to have been unroofed. And it says, Yeshua ze'alchocha be'gemar harach be'chidusha. If you get your hands on the chidusha around on sukkah, you'll find more. I think this is already giving you a peek into what may be going on. But maybe going on a voice in the second day in Tosfos as well. Perhaps that's what Tosfos is driving at. Either the same as the Ran, or at least similar to Ran. The second day Tosfos also the Kibbul Rabbanan, also the rejection of the similar tribe of the ratios of the first day in Tosfos. Maybe driving something that says Kibbul that is going to block sunlight. Maybe what Tosfos had in mind was the Ran is saying. They're not blocking sunlight, but blocking the indirect sun heat. And then you can say, look, up to 20 amos, it'll block something. Excuse me. Right, and as I said, look, 20, the difference, maybe there's a cutoff, right, maybe there could be, because it's no longer a simple linear system. It's all about the dispersion of heat. The Tosfos says, okay, so maybe there are certain cutoffs where beyond that number, there's going to be blockage or no blockage. There's going to be more blockage, less blockage. But anyway, it could be, it's not just going to be a question of the ratios. I'm not sure that fully is Nyasha the second day. I think at least gives you a direction in which to work with to see, and if you want to take a look at the Sharan and see if this can you can work with the Ran to work up shot in Tosfos. And finally. We discussed 3 points. We have a fourth and final point. Today we discussed 3 points. We discussed the places of Ham Barabba, that there must be some fourth shot. We discussed Pshat number 2, we discussed Pshat the first Teretz of Tosfos, the Alumdish Teretz of Trigonometric Kasha. Number 3, we just discussed briefly a beginning of an approach to the second day in Tosfos. Maybe the second day in Tosfos working with along the lines of what the Ran is talking about. The Kibbul Rabbanan maybe has more to do with heat than with light. And finally, the last piece of the Gemara goes on to quote, we spent a lot of time in the Chinuch Chassidut. We remember with Hilni Amalka, and the Gemara goes on to say, what does it all have to do with, we looked at that as sort of an independent sugya. What does it all have to do with the question of Lama Mikaf? The question of Lama Mikaf was, 1 second, what type of sukkah? Well, you said Hilni Amalka was a sukkah more than 20 amas, and it's relevant, really? Well, you just told me that the psul Lama Mikaf is very limited. And if you want to tell me the psul Lama Mikaf is limited to when it's not defined as Magiyas Osama, okay. And the only Amalek had a very nice, beautiful, well-ventilated sukkah. The walls only went up to 10 amos, and then there was a space and a framework with open space and schach on top. Okay. It's reasonable to say the Hilni Amalka sukkah was not the found Magiz Osah. But the Gemara goes on to say Gemara Rav. But to say the Hilni Amalka lived in a narrow sukkah, certainly say Zayin Tvachim, even 4 amos. The Gemara is very bothered. The Gemara tries to work out. Maybe I keep my work out of Teretz. The Gemara is very bothered. And that might answer one of the biggest kashas in this whole sugya, which is that Psak, by the Rishonim, 3 feet backwards up until this point from the whole floor of the Gemara. Because I think I mentioned you look in Tavarish Lam, you look in the riff right here. We're actually open to the riff. Alf 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 alf, and the Rush quotes him like he always does. Ikeman dam hilchus like Rabba. There are those who probably go on and pass like Rabba, but then the last line, anan mestaber hilchus like Rabba. But Riff says I think we should pass like Rabba. Goes on to talk about why based on external sugyas. And you look in the Rush, he quotes a host of Rishonim who passed him like Rabba, the Rishai Ditrani, and the Bitzgeis, and this one, and that one. The Rush is a one or two passed like Rabba, almost everyone's passed like Rabba. I look in Tafri Shalom and Gimel, I believe it is, in a tour in the Shulchan Aruch, everyone passed like Rabba. There was a Miut, quoted by the Rush, Riff and the Rush, who passed like, everyone passed like Rabba, which means, I don't care about how high the walls are, I don't care how wide it is, it's always possible. There were a few immune possible like Rabba, which would mean the bottom line gives a soft makes it okay. No one passes like Reb Zeir. Which is really surprising, because on Amun Aleph, they asked the Kasha Reb Zeir, and Reb Zeir answered it. And we got to Amun Bey, top of our days, and Tyson said, Reb Zeir's answer was Gavon. Rabba's answer to his Kadah by Tashim, not so Gavon. Right? So Rabba liked the answer, but other Amram didn't. Reb Zeir's character by the Kasha, Mishani Shapir. And even Rabba, on top of days on days, they asked the Kasha against him, he didn't respond. Right? We saw this a little bit. Rabba, the Ritzvah, talk about how would Rabba respond. The Gemara doesn't even present Rabba's response. And the Gemara doesn't present their Rabba's response. But the Gemara's Tosfos says we Reb Zeir took care of that bias kasha beautifully, and when the Gemara asks a new kasha Reb Zeir, he answers that also. The Shlami Atarti. So Reb Zeir Lechora is in the best position of all three Amora. He the Miyashim all the kasha as well. Rishonim told us. And there was an Amora here on other days who felt like Reb Zeir. Right? Reb Huna was like Reb Yosha was like Reb Rabba. Reb Huna was like Reb Zeir. Reb Zeir is well positioned. No one holds like Reb Zeir la'alacha. That's surprising. Most where we show them go in hell, most we show them hold like Rabba. There are a few holdouts who hold like Rabba. No one holds like Reb Zeir. If you would stop where you get to deal with an olive, it's incredibly strange. And there may be external sugyas, riftos, there are other sugyas that may be thinking like Rabba. But no one holds like Reb Zeir from Minei Bay from our sugya. I mean, Reb Zeir seems like the strongest. So number one, okay, Yom Paskin and Shiloh Media Bay, that's not how Tari works. To look at Dimitar Nid Makamecha, Shin Makamecha, let's look at the bigger picture, and that's what Riff does. He said, well, the Gemara later sounds like Rabba, another Gemara later sounds like Rabba, that Dior Sarai is relevant. And others, Riff Rush points out those rites aren't necessarily also Gedalic. Let's talk about Shah. No one holds, not a single Rishon holds like Reb Zeir. The answer is, because of Gimel and Aleph. When you get to Gimel and Aleph, that's when the Gemara says, whoa, a second, Rabba is fine, in terms of Hilal Yamalka, Rabba is fine. Because it could be that it's entirely plausible that Hilal Yamalka's Zasukah had the Panos Eimagiyah Zasach. That would be a very reasonable, actually beautiful way to build a regal Sukkah. So you have these tall, tall walls, and then beyond that, you have a lot of space to let in ventilation. But the chidarko shall not kaleshi b'sukkah, the Gemara, k'sukkah k'tan, the Gemara says, on Gimla and Aleph, that is difficult. So the Gemara works hard, but it's not pashas. And the Tosfos points out, Rashi's working on to figure what the Gemara is saying, there's a lot of dochak here. There's a lot of dochak. So the Gemara gives Heirutsin, but it could be that because of the end of the sugya Gimla and Aleph, that's why Oliver Rishon said, up until now, Reb Zeir is doing very well, but once you get to Hilal Yamalka, you could be Miyashi Reb Zeir. But that's no. So we can work him out, but in terms of if we're picking which Amor we're going to pass him, like, once you get to Hilal Yamalka, we say Reb Zeir is not the way we're going to go. To say that we're going to limit it, only the whole din is limited to the narrow sukkah, it's conceivable but difficult to say that comes the case of Hilal Yamalka. So from Hilal Yamalka, we had folks who learned to say that piece of Gemara in terms of the internal chinuch issues. But also, Lenin Amata, the one that pointed, could be, is the one that pointed to Rishonim that we're not going to accept Rabbi Zeira. And then the question became, is it Rabba or Rabba? And ironically, despite the fact that the top place in Beis and Beis said, and other Amoraim didn't find Rabba's Teretz Abayis Kasha so compelling, Rabba did, and Lamaskana wrote Rishonim, and the Psak in the Shulchan Aruch is Halacha Mais like Rabba. And with that, we close the sugya. Halacha Mais, now we pass in like the Chacham and Tanakham against Rabbi Yehuda. The Lamal Nikaf is Pasul. Lamal Nikaf is Pasul, if that ever comes up. Tafrei Shlam Gimel Sif Aleph, it's the first Ein Mishpat Min Sechta. And not only that, but the Rishonim are clear, and the Rush point, the Beis Yosef points out the Rambam also seems to present it this way, with no qualifications. The Rambam says it, Lamal Nikaf is Pasul, period. Does not differentiate between wide and narrow, does not differentiate between tall walls or short walls. The Kol Halacha Maisa, we follow the vast majority of Rishonim, including the Rif and the Rush and the Rambam and others, that we pass like Rava, so therefore all the Nafka Minas, we don't accept any limitations of Talmidei Rav. Even if the defense like Yisrael Tzfat is Shalta Ba'enav, it doesn't help us, because we hold like Rava. And if it's wider than four Amas, it doesn't help us. Okay, does it sell stock? But it's still, you run afoul of Rava, because Rava had said the language of Aroi, the Gemara that the Torah uses, teaches me it has to be not more than 20 Amos, come what may. That is how we paskin halacha l'maisa. And that brings us to the two dots, the top of Gimel Amnon.